Ladies and gentlemen, and our friends beyond the binary, it is time to put your ears together for Indie A.
With an unexpected distant male scream, the theme tune to Indie AF gently starts to fade, but Sarah stops the music abruptly. Her voice repeats back at
her. Stop the music.
This episode hasn't started yet. That was weird.
What's happening?
The echo fades, leaving Sarah breathing raggedly in fear of what was to come. She adjusts her headphones and gently turns her vocal flaps and other vocal wares to the mic. Unable to focus, she stops, and through the garishly wallpapered walls of her mind, she senses an audible presence streaming into the void through her headphones that makes her feel uneasy.
I sense an audible presence through my headphones. I feel uneasy. It's creepy. Hang on. Wait.
She exclaimed, turning her head to the side like a curious dog. She said as she started to introduce her next stunt in the AF with a faint tremble to her voice.
Well, you're a bossy narrator, aren't you?
Not usually. Just for you.
Thank you.
Why don't you lean into the Blair Witch style on this intro, or...
Or what?
I'll turn off your mic.
You can do that?
Yep.
We don't want that, I don't think. Okay, people of this crazy, beautiful mix-up world, my next guest is hugely kind and thoughtful, an amazing presence in the indie audio fiction world.
Thank you.
You're welcome. From room to a
small town
via some
crazy town awesome
to the infamously well-regarded
many time downloaded
horror anthology series.
Creepypod.
You recognize him from his beauteous dulcet tones and love for horror storytelling. Yes, today's show has an entirely horror focus, and oh my giggity giggity goodness, here he is. Yes, it's the John Grills. Bow, please.
Round of applause all around.
Bow.
And scene.
Welcome. That was glorious. Welcome, sir, to this place of audio loving goodness. How are you?
I am doing well. Thanks for having me here.
So you've been a voice in my head for such a long time, and now you still are, but you're talking back personally to me, which is so very exciting. And I first came across you as the small town horror when there was about 6 podcasts for audio fiction.
It felt that way. Yeah.
and you were one of them. And I've got to say it. So you seem like a lovely, lovely man. Now, why is it that you want to scare the excrement out of us, John? Why do you want to scare us with this horror? What draws you to that?
You know, there's something fundamental about horror for me. It's kind of this ultimate unifier, okay, that regardless of anything else, people can argue their senses of humor or whatever else. Like, yeah, I'm funny, or I get jokes or whatever when they're complaining about some comedian. Mm-hmm. But we all understand fear, mm-hmm, and we all understand terror. And there is that common bond between them. And especially when you really start hanging out in the horror community, there's this really interesting, like, friendly kinship with it.
Yeah.
Like, the scares and the terror, like, it's not malicious. We're not trying to be mean with it. It is entertainment. And it's really this interesting, like, duality of existence, where it's like you go to some horror convention or something and you see this big smile on Kane Hodder's face, like the guy who plays Jason, like he's happy to meet the fans, yeah, when in reality, like, he wants to scare him. He wants to intimidate. You know, it's an oddly fun and welcoming space.
Yeah. And did it start for you with small town horror, or were there other roots that kind of brought you into audio fiction specifically?
I mean, coming into audio fiction was largely being an unsuccessful writer.
No, I don't believe you.
I could show you the...
You just hadn't found your audiences right. That's all it was.
Well, that's very sweet of you to say, but I could show you the sales of the books I tried to write. And I'm trying the more traditional publishing route now, but after having spent so much time in podcasting, it's insanely frustrating to deal with those timelines.
Right. Okay.
And so, yeah, and kind of the bridged version of it was I stumbled across podcasts and really fell in love, really had my imagination captured by like the early audio dramas, like, I'm trying to remember what the precursor to Life After was.
It was Message, really one of, was it?
The Message. Yeah. Yes, thank you. That was really the first one that I heard. Mm. And it really, I was really like, what is this? Like,
yeah. By Mac Rogers, one of my favorite writers too. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And then from there, I discovered like the No Sleep podcast and Limetown. And I was like, I really like listening to this. Mm. This presentation of like it's the truth. I mean, you know, how many people who first listened to Limetown or who have since found it have Googled, is Limetown real?
Yes.
Or at least before they saw the presentation on Facebook, like with the Jessica Biel. Mm. And it really, really fascinated me. And I was just talking to someone about this recently. There's this really fantastic audio drama out there called Pleasure Town.
Yeah.
And I think they're coming back for another season. I got pretty excited. It's an Old West style audio drama, which you don't hear much of anyway.
True.
But the voice acting was so spectacular. I was just enamored with it. And they were on SoundCloud. And SoundCloud's player used to show how many downloads.
Right.
Or how many plays
something
had. And the first episode of Pleasure Town, when I saw it or listened to it, had something like 20,000 plays or 25,000 plays. Mm. And I think I literally just stared at that number like, wait a second. Somebody made a thing that's been listened to 20,000 times?
That is amazing, isn't it, to think
like,
of?
I could not comprehend it. Mm. And meanwhile, I'm trying to get 100 people to even read one of my almost half dozen books.
Mm.
And I'm like, maybe there's something to this.
Yeah.
Like maybe I could write something like that. But at the same time, being outside that space, and especially before podcasting like really blew up, I was like, I can't do that. I can't make a podcast. Like I had done some podcasting stuff where it was me just talking to someone on a Tascam recorder and it was horrible quality, et cetera. It was just talking head stuff.
Right.
But I was like, but an audio drama, like that's... There's no possible way. There's no resources for that out there. No one's telling us how to do it. And enter the audio drama production podcast.
Yay! Team ADPP. Yeah, I will sing those praises again. If you have not found that podcast, this still is relevant today. So look it up. The audio drama production podcast started by Matthew McLean and Robert Cudmore. Absolute legends. Yeah. So
it was absolutely critical that if I hadn't found that podcast, it never would have even occurred to me that it was possible to make one.
Right.
And I found it, and I found the Facebook group, which I'm not even sure if there is a Facebook group for it anymore.
It's morphed into the Audio Drama Hub now.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So it still exists, but under a different name.
Yeah. I'm not a huge fan of Facebook groups, so I'm not a part of any anymore.
Okay. Well, that's a shame. I think there's been a really good run on the Audio Drama Hub. So if you remember, thank you for making it a groovy place to be.
Yeah. You know, it's, I think for me, I do best with passionate people speaking passionately about the things they love.
Yeah.
I don't do well when all of a sudden negativity starts to enter it.
Same. I'm rubbish at that.
And that's not me saying that people can't be negative and can't have like feel their feels. It's when it turns into like, oh, that show sucks.
Sure. Right. Yeah.
That it's like, you didn't have to say it. You can feel that. Listen, there's plenty of podcasts that I listen to that I'm like, this isn't for me.
Right. Yeah.
And I move on.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't have to trounce it.
Yeah. Like there's no reason to try and drag somebody else down for my opinion of a show.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I largely got out of groups because inevitably that sort of thing will happen.
Sadly, individual. And that's the thing, like out of thousands of people, normally it's like one or two people come along mm-hmm. and just can ruin it for quite a few. So
yeah,
I can see where you come from with that. I'm not good with any kind of conflict of that nature.
Yeah. And you know, and I will fall victim to it as well. And some of it right. was like, especially jealousy early on okay. when you first get yeah. started. And as creators, so we kind of alluded to this off mic when I said that, you know, we're selfish. You start making a podcast because you're a selfish person.
Yeah.
You know, you might be saying, I want to create this thing for free to share,
yeah.
but you want attention or you want something. You want to show that you can do this thing.
No, I was saying before we came on the actual recording part that, yeah, basically NDAF exists so I can get better as a creative, right? Yeah. So it's those yeah. selfish reasons. It's just learning from all of these wonderful people like you that I'm able to actually speak to. So.
Yeah. And honestly, there's nothing wrong with it. I think Ira Glass had some quote years and years ago. I'm most positive it was Ira Glass of This American Life. He said, I think he was specifically talking about writers, but it absolutely applies to any creatives. That you get into something because you think you can do it better.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like it's not, writers don't read other pieces of fiction and think, you know what, this is the best. Mm-hmm. Like everyone out there is so good, I can't do any better. So I'm going to write a book. Like it's not that. It's, I think I can write something better. I can create something better. And it's not necessarily malicious by any means. Mm-hmm. I think there was this interview, Lisa Kudrow, who played Phoebe on Friends.
Love her. Yeah.
And so many other TV shows, amazing actress.
Yeah, yeah.
And she has like a degree in biology.
Okay.
And she said that one day she was watching TV or she was listening to something that on the radio or something. And she just said to herself, like, they're not any good at that. I can do better than that. And she went and auditioned and got Friends. or Mad About
yeah,
You.
Agree.
And then that turned into Friends. And she was right. And I think it sounds conceited and it sounds cocky and everything else, but it's not wrong. I think a lot of us do this because we think I can do this thing, maybe not specifically better than another person, but you think you can do it well.
Yeah. There's you know? Room. There's room for it. Your voice, yeah, there's a place for your voice to be, to share it.
Yeah. Mm. And I think, unfortunately, because that's a root, not for everybody, but I'd say a good percentage of creators, that when you try something and you think that you have made something better, or that you have the potential to make something better and you don't see the success that other people in the same vein have found,
yeah.
that's when it starts to turn toxic.
Mm-hmm.
And people can't keep that toxicity inside themselves. They have to let it out. And instead of it being like, I can do better, or how can I do better? It's, well, they didn't deserve it.
Right.
Or they're no good. Like, or that stinks. And it's like,
it can turn.
Yeah. And so unfortunately, it's just why I'm not in, like I said, I'm not in groups. Like, I just don't like being around that. It just brings me down. Like, that's why I'm not on Twitter. I can't stand the negativity anymore. Like, I've got too much going on in my life to let someone else's bad time ruin my day.
Yeah. And I think that is a really interesting thing. It's like being selective as to where you are, because you can, those kind of negative oozes can affect you, can't they? And I must say, I have had my ups and downs with it all too. And I try to be a supportive, because I really love the fact that, you know, this whole fiction space has exploded in the last few years especially. And where I once could keep up with what was happening, people are saying, oh, I just got cast in so-and-so and I haven't heard of it and it's on its second season and things like that. And you're just like, this is brilliant and I love it, but I wish I could keep up still, but I can't.
Whoops. Hey, what did you say? Enjoy your audio fictions of the day.
Oi. Hello. I'm Lou Sutcliffe. I'm a writer primarily, but occasionally do a spot of editing, and even more occasionally voice acting. Most recently I contributed a handful of episodes of the new season of H.G. Wells' Has His Regrets, which is a time travel audio drama coming soonish to your ears, wherever fine podcasts can be obtained. I binge listen to a lot of podcasts while I'm down the clinical trials data mines during my day job. My preference is for spooky stuff, horror and fantasy. Like a lot of people, I started out with delightful office comedies, Welcome to Night Vale and the Magnus Archives, then moved on to chthonic opuses like Old Gods of Appalachia and the Sale Verses. I'm going to recommend a random collection of sparkly little gems and horrifying void orbs I've run across or been recommended. some of which are still releasing and others which are long finished, but you can still find in the dusty corners of the audio fiction web. So firstly, Harlan Guthrie's Malevolent. I cannot begin to describe how beautiful this story is. What starts out appearing to be a very formulaic Arkham detective delves too deep, and then suddenly, kind of deal, suddenly blossoms into the most touching, poignant, and pathos-filled tale of two, let's say, beings, uncovering their humanity and facing their grief together. It's also somehow intensely gay without actually ever being intended to be gay. Every time a new episode releases, I have to reach for the family-sized box of aloe vera tissues. The editing and vocal work, which is all entirely by this one intensely talented guy, by the way, is pristine and blends seamlessly with the frequently heart-wrenching music. Bravo, Mr. Guthrie, you absolute monster. So that's www.malevolent.ca if you want to find it. Next, Maddie Sills' The Prickwillow Papers, which is an adorable comedy story about a recently graduated half-elf mage who is now desperately trying to apply for jobs. Her grumpy, sweary Yorkshire fairy friend, and the shenanigans and scrapes they get into. It seems to have finished way back in late 2019, which is a shame, as I would love to hear more from those characters. You can still find it at theprickwillowpapers.libsyn.com. Thirdly, Be Not Afraid. It's a fun audio drama by Rebecca Hansen and Tommy Hellberg. I was recommended by a friend. It's at www.metatronspeaks.com for this one. The Metatron, Archangel and Voice of God and former human, is making regular radio broadcasts to his fellow angels, retelling biblical stories in his own particular idiom, and providing commentary on incursions from hell, and also the exploits of a couple of human thieves who have bitten off way more than they can chew trying to steal something from heaven. The observant nerd may note that their page icon is the multiocular O, an exotic variant of the Cyrillic letter O, appearing only once in a single 15th century manuscript of the Book of Psalms in Old Church Slavonic in the phrase, many-eyed seraphim. Fourth, Wake of Corrosion. If you imagine Stephen King's The Mist, or maybe the game The Last of Us, but instead of the setting being some dreary quotidian town in Maine, it's some pleasant quotidian locale in the English Midlands. Despite the unsettling occurrences and plaintive Fallout New Vegas-style Is Anybody Out There broadcasts, I actually find it quite soothing to listen to, probably because the accents of the two brothers in it remind me of my friends from that area. It's on its second season currently, so follow them on at Wake of Corrosion on Twitter for episodes as they release. Lastly, The Forest, which is a short interactive story by Richard McLean Smith of Unexplained Podcast, at Unexplained Pod on Twitter. This was recommended to me when I was trying to research Choose Your Own Adventure Star podcasts. I was curious to see how they work mechanically. I write and run LARPs and TTRPGs as well, so game design is interesting to me. This was the one I enjoyed most of those I found, as it's deeply dark and creepy. It's like a fairy tale with multiple horrible endings. Only 10 episodes, but worth exploring all the possible outcomes if you can stomach them. So there you go, Sarah, a one random assortment of weird stuff I've enjoyed over the past few years. If you want to hear more from me, I can be found being awkward and confused by everything on Twitter, at LouJSutcliffe, and be sure to keep an eye out for the new season of H.G. Wells Has His Regrets, which is at H.G. Wells Regrets on Twitter.
Whoops! Woohoo! What did we do? We shared pod AF highlights with you!
Oi! But yeah, it is that thing of, you know, it's an amazing space right now, and I'm very excited to see, what happens next with it. Like, what else could happen with it? You know, there's so many potentials for, some really exciting things to happen. So, with regards to your input into how things have developed, let's like rewind back a little bit, if I may, just you kicking in and creating these stories. So did you do a translation of your own stories that were books directly into the audio fiction, or was there some other step to it that happened before it was released?
I had considered doing something like that, but I was like, I wasn't super proud of the books I'd written, but I liked the mythology that I'd created.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
And my first idea, for those of you who haven't heard it, there is an absolutely fantastic audio drama out there called Campfire Radio Theater by John Ballantyne, who's phenomenal.
Yeah.
What he can do with Audacity is magic. He should teach college classes, because I can't do that with Audacity. And he had this I wish I could remember the name off the top of my head, but yeah, this great episode that was around a radio station.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always been a little bit fascinated with that disc jockey, especially like the 80s, 90s style or late night, like yeah. overnight, like one guy in the room, like no lights in the room talking to the faceless masses, et cetera, which yeah. maybe is part of the draw podcasting for me as
Indeed.
I sit in my closet.
Yes.
but originally I thought about doing something like that, like do a radio type show. Like people will call into like this small town radio show about the weird things that happened to them. And I thought I could do it all by myself. And I quickly learned I am not a mimic. I cannot do other voices much beyond my vocal range. And from there, it kind of turned. And I was like, how could I make it a little bit more serial-esque, a little bit more like some of the other shows that were really finding the audience early on, like Limetown and Black Tapes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of where it came from. And then through the Audio Drama Production Podcast group, I found some people who were interested in helping out because I had no money. I had a very, very low-paying job at the time.
Right.
And I was like, I can barely pay my bills. I want to make this thing and I want to give it a shot. And is anyone interested? And I found a couple of people who were interested.
Yeah.
And it kind of just went from there. And I got very, very lucky that the community is, or at least was, so much more open than I expected. Like, hey, I got this role. Are you interested? And people be like, yeah. It was pretty simple. And even luckier that I got David Cummings and Peter Lewis from the No Sleep Podcast to contribute
voices.
To the
yeah,
show.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I still remember writing that email in my little cube at work, just asking like, hey, you know, I love No Sleep and I was interested, like, I'm making this podcast. Do you think that you'd be interested in like lending a voice to it?
Yeah.
And I think at the time, No Sleep was big, but nowhere near what it would become.
Right. Yeah, it was kind of early days for it, wasn't it? Yeah. Mm.
Yeah. And I think David and Peter got back to me like same day, like emailed me back.
Awesome.
And I hadn't written a role for either of them. And because I didn't expect them to even get back to me.
Oh.
And as soon as they did, I immediately wrote what I wanted. Like I wrote the intro for Peter to read and I wrote the sheriff character for David to read.
Awesome.
And I think I was just like shaking as I was writing, like, I have to do this quickly. I have to make it seem like I already had a script for him. I have to be a professional or I'll never do it. And it kind of took off from there. And it was, and I always attribute like the support that I got from David and No Sleep early on with anybody ever listening to anything I ever made.
Oh, well, no, I think it's had its own kudos, right? It wasn't. Yes, of course, some voice actors are a lure. Of course they are. They start to get their fan bases and so on. But yeah, I think at the crux of it is good storytelling, right? So
I hope so. It's exhausting for sure.
Yeah, it certainly had. I can remember sort of sitting and listening to some of it, being quite disturbed by those children's voices. Yeah, no.
Those early episodes are some of the. I've always said they're the most fun you'll ever have writing a podcast is season one, because you can just write questions.
Right, of course.
It doesn't have to be any answers. It's pure mystery.
Yeah,
and
I hope that it all ties up at some point after season eight.
Yeah, I'm sure that there were some things that I never ended up tying up in the first place. But it's also, it's a tough tightrope to cross too, because you're allowing the listeners' imaginations to take over and to fill in gaps, especially if you end on cliffhangers.
Yeah, true.
And you have to accept that they're going to fill in their own blanks.
Mm.
Whether you're going to or not, they will before you do. And you're not going to live up to everyone's expectation.
Mm-hmm.
There's always going to be someone like, oh, that's what that was. And there'll be someone who's like, oh, no, that was cool.
Right.
It's just you have to be willing to accept when you build up cliffhangers that there's going to be some people who will be bitter that they were left hanging on a cliff.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. This is the thing. It's like you can't please all of the people all of the time.
Nope. Not even close.
But I mean, you did, what was it, three series of small town horror? Was I remember being
I did
quite...
four. I don't think anyone knows that I did a fourth. because I entitled the fourth The Truth About Small Town Horror.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
And that one was was almost entirely narrated with David Ault.
Okay.
Of No Sleep.
We're a big fan of David Ault on NDIF. Woo, David Ault bands.
Yeah, David Ault's the best. And his work ethic is amazing. Mm. If you ever get a chance to work with him, I've never had anyone return lines faster. I'm fast. And it's like he's sitting in front of a mic waiting.
Yeah.
It is unbelievably fast. And he hosted the season kind of digging into and figuring out what actually happened to me, or Ryan Jennings' character.
Yeah.
And then it kind of culminates with the fate of Ryan, like what actually happens to him. And I think I saw a comment. I made the mistake of actually reading a review. I in a moment of weakness, I normally never do because it ruins my days. Yeah, exactly. I can listen to 100 great comments get wiped out by one negative one.
Yeah,
from me,
it's human nature, isn't it? It's awful. Yeah. Although if you're like a Scottish podcast and you get a 2 stars, you can put it on a beer mat and sell it for happiness.
That was brilliant. I love Scottish podcasts, especially them doing that. That was so smart.
Well, it's still gently ticking over. Of course, I don't know if you know, but Matthew's had a beautiful baby girl, and so his world is elsewhere. But it's still gently releasing now and then. Just did some lines the other day, actually.
Nice.
It's great fun. But yeah, I think that's what's crazy is that I remember it finishing and feeling slightly bereft that it had gone from the landscape. And that's a good few, what was that, 2019, was it?
I would have released season 4 finally in 2019. I think it took me almost a year, I think, from the third one to finish the fourth. Because it just kind of... I had a really hard time in season 3, like mentally.
Okay.
For a lot of reasons, one of which being that the story took a really heavy emotional toll out of me.
Yeah.
I took it really personally because I'd written and I'd performed it.
Yes. You're in it, aren't you? Absolutely.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You're not just commenting about Ryan, you're commenting about me.
Yeah.
And it was really hard financially. It took a huge toll. I just wasn't making any money. Like Patreon numbers drops. I made the mistake of switching like from per month to per episode.
Okay.
And for some reason, like everybody left.
Oh, no.
Because they didn't want to pay per episode, even though you could like set how much you wanted to donate. And so I was just losing money every episode.
I know there was a change in Patreon as well where suddenly people left. So it might have been that too because of the charges they were doing. So it might have hit at the same point if I vaguely remember.
Yeah. And we were already, like my family just wasn't financially, we were just barely squeaking by.
Oh, gosh.
And I was like, why am I still doing this thing that's taking my time and my money and my mental health?
Doesn't it? Yeah.
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 So it was just exhausting. So by the time season 3 was over and I had already started Creepy, that I was like, all right, I'm done with Small Town Horror. I'll do one more season that I'm not even going to be in.
Okay.
And then I will wrap up Creepy in October. So I've made it for like 7 months or something.
Yeah.
And that'll be it. I'll be done podcasting. I'm just going to stick to my job.
Yep.
And now I just passed the 5th year anniversary of Creepy. So
congratulations on that, by the way.
Thank you.
Is one of the best horror podcasts on the planet. And I think if folks haven't yet found it, well, you've got a hell of a backload to enjoy.
Yeah, you got about 600 stories to get through at this point.
That'll take you, what, a couple of weeks? Then you have to hound John to make more and make them faster.
Well, then move over to Patreon. We have like another 500 over there.
Good Lord. See, this is wonderful. So let's just talk about that transition then. So you actually were doing both at the same time. So how did Creepy come about? Because you collaborated with quite a lot of different people to make that happen from the early days, especially from what I remember.
Yeah, that was a very early labor of love, for sure.
Mm.
I can't remember what it was. It was probably around the time I'd started doing Small Town Horror. I stumbled across this video on YouTube called Watch Mojo. It was just a list show, like top 10, whatever. And it was a top 10 creepypastas. And I was like, what the heck's a creepypasta? Pretty much like everyone who ever
yes.
hears the word now.
Yes, true.
And I watched it and I was like, what are, like, I didn't, like, I couldn't quite wrap my mind around what the list was about, but I was fascinated by it. Because I was casually into horror. I wasn't obsessed with it by any means. Like, I liked watching scary movies and stuff. And
yes.
And I found a really old narration of Ted the Caver.
Okay.
And it sounded like it was done by a very young man, maybe 20 years old.
Uh-huh.
It was very rough. It sounded like it was just his laptop audio.
Right.
But the story just pulled me in. I was like, this is amazing. And about a year later, I was working at a different job that had a firewall up, so I couldn't listen to YouTube or watch YouTube.
Right.
And so I tried to find Ted the Caver on a podcast.
Ah, yeah.
And I couldn't. Mm. Like, it wasn't anywhere. No one had done it, as far as I could find. Mm. And I was like, well, that's weird. So I tried to find, like, No End House and Russian Sleep Experiment and Candle Cove, and I couldn't find it. Yeah. I was like, well, why aren't these stories on a podcast? And that was that. Oh.
You're in. He's hook, line, and sinker.
Yeah. So it started out pretty selfishly of me just wanting to have a podcast that had the creepypastas that I loved on them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And me still not being very good at sound design, I reached out to the community and I basically started it simply saying, hey, I want to narrate these stories. If you can help out with some sound design, like music or FX,
yeah.
basically, like, if you want to guest produce, then at the same time, we'll do a shout out for your show.
Brilliant.
And it'll be like kind of win-win. Like, if people listen, you know, like, I think I tried to pay you like what I could.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it was also just trying to help promote the community that had helped me.
Yeah. And I really saw that in that early kickoff. It was lovely, actually. And in getting to know those producers too via, this way in was really, really groovy. So people like Pacific, wasn't it? Pacific Obadiah and Travis Vengroff and Steve Blizzin, other names that were on it. Later, is that right? So,
And Zach, who I'd worked with on Small Town Horror, and even Owen McCune even helped out doing an episode. Who's such a fantastic voice actor. He still does things for Creepy.
Yeah.
He's just the best. And it was one of those things where I was like, well, this is great. And we can do these shows. And then I was kind of like, okay, we're running out of the classics. And, I came up with the idea to do the 31 days of horror, 31 days in a row of scary stories, just to
finish it up.
Yeah. I was like, I'd never heard any podcast doing that before. And I was like, well, this could be a cool idea. Why not? Let's go for it. And it was horribly exhausting.
Mm.
And
perpetual.
Yeah. And at the same time, like, that's when I really met Steve Blizzin, who was my longtime producer up until just about 5 or 6 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
And his turnaround time was unbelievable. He's like, yeah, I can help you out if you need help with some stories. And I'd send him the audio and he'd send it back to me like a few hours later. And I was like, what? How'd you do that?
Yeah.
Like, I've never worked with a producer who worked that fast before. And that's not a knock against other producers. That's a mark on how fast Steve can actually work when he's focused on the project.
Yeah. No, he's a legend.
Yeah. So he's really helped me get through that first 31 days. And it was around that time that Bloody Disgusting first kind of reached out to me.
Yes.
And those were kind of the catalyst for me to be like, all right, well, let's write a little long. I mean, it's Bloody Disgusting. They're one of the biggest horror presence on the internet. Like, that, this could be something, right? And then 2 weeks later, I lost my job. And I was like, well, maybe I should focus on Creepy so I don't drive myself crazy while I'm looking for a new job.
Yep.
So... yeah, I did 31 days of horror, so 31 straight stories in October. And then I think I just had two back-to-back Sunday production weeks. And then I did 42 days in a row again.
Oh, gosh,
and
that's immense.
Yeah, and since then, we haven't missed a Sunday production release in, I think, it's over 4 years at this point.
Isn't it? That's amazing. And with regards to choice of stories now then, having that sort of collaboration you've got, is it still very much your choice or do people pitch you with things and there's a different process? Can you talk us through how it works from sort of pitch to production and beyond?
Sure. Originally, it was us scouting. You know, we would go on, especially like Creepypasta. It used to be Creepypasta Wiki, and now it's creepypasta.fandom.com. And it's a Creative Commons share alike site. And I was like, oh, great. I can just use these stories, because that's what I was narrating the classic stories off of, too, because I didn't know anything about how to even reach out to an author, let alone the legalities around it. And once we started kind of running out of those, we started, you know, looking through Reddit and contacting people on Reddit, like, hey, is it okay if we narrate this? And
and
we did that for a while. And then
so new writers, keep going.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
You never know who's going to pick up your writing.
Well, and it got to the point where we just started accepting submissions. Like people, instead of, because it's also pretty exhaustive to continually read through stories and see if it's the right fit, if it's the right length, if it's the right tone, etc. So we opened up submissions, and now writers will send them in directly to us, and some we take, some we don't, and we pay everyone involved in the process for the one-time rights. Like, writers get to keep their stories. They're not mine. I just like reading them. So I'm more than happy to say, hey, great, here's, you know, here's payment for us to narrate it once. And then if you want to sell it to whoever else, like pending like whatever their requirements, go right ahead. It's yours. Do whatever you want with it.
Awesome. So what are you looking for in those stories then, John? What floats your boat? What makes you go, yes, this is a creepy story?
Well, it's hard to say. I've read so many stories at this point. My thing, and I try to emphasize this with people, you can sell me a lot easier on a story that's one person talking. Partially because from a production standpoint, it's considerably easier than multiple speaking roles.
Gosh, sound design for one voice is, yes, definitely.
And some, some stories require it. Some stories you can kind of, you can make it work, but like No Sleep, I then and still consider No Sleep to be just a gold standard. They are unbelievable.
Awesome
production and their stance in the community, at least in my eyes.
I'm
like, well, there's no point in me trying to be them. I'll never be them. And we don't need two of them. But what I can do is tell stories. And so what I try to do is kind of take the production out of it and just try and read a story like it happened to me. And because, and people ask me all the time or send in emails asking about being a narrator. And I always tell them, listen, anyone can read a story. Anybody can. You can hear it on any number of podcasts or YouTube channels, whatever. I want you to tell a story. If you're sitting across from a campfire, if you're sitting at a bar, if you're sitting in your living room and you're telling somebody about your day, the measure of your voice is always going to change. The speed, the enunciation, you're going to pause.
Slurriness at the bar.
especially if it's something hard that happened to you. And that's what I want. I want to listen to a story and know that it's fiction and still feel like, wow, it sounds like it happened to them.
Love it. In the moment.
Like that's what I really like. I like that I'm sitting down and I'm going to tell you this really hard thing that happened to me, or it's crazy, or I need to wrap my mind around it somehow. Like that's what I look for more often than not, especially now in stories. And, you know, and we have a backlog of stories, and I always let my narrators pick their own stories. I don't pick them for them, because I want my narrators also to read a story and say, this is one I can read. I don't want to think that their voice is going to be right for it. I want them to be able to believe the story they're reading.
Love that. Have that connection. And and I think that's an interesting thing regards to now having other narrators. Do you have any kind of overseeing of what they do, or are they very much left to remote record and ping back, or do you direct them over internet?
No, not one bit. The only oversight we have is general quality of their edits. When they send in their audio, if there are issues, like if, you know, if I listen to a story and it's like, man, that just kind of flat, you know, like I won't make them re-record, because we turn out a ton of content anyway. And I'm like, okay, we can do better on the next one.
Okay.
Because I'm not, as opposed to something that's episodic, I'm not so tied into a single story.
Yeah.
Or a single performance that can really derail other things. With mine, because it's an anthology, people can come in and out whenever they want.
Yeah.
And any one story might be someone's favorite.
Mm-hmm.
I've learned over, you know, 1,000+ stories and over 5 years that I have no idea what someone's going to love.
Yes. Our fickle audiences, right?
Absolutely. I have read stories that I were like, this is amazing. People are going to love this. And I got no response. And I have read stories where I'm like, oh, we just needed a story this week. Let's just read this and move on and we'll do better next week. And people, all of a sudden we'll be like, that was amazing. I'll be like, really?
I love it. Audiences are so, yeah, unpredictable. I'll totally agree. But even to get anything back from an audience is exciting,
yeah.
Right? And do you get that connection with folks? Do you get feedback and how?
Yeah, if I do, I generally, as weird as this sounds, I generally avoid it.
Okay.
Early on, I did, especially Patreon. I wholly value our patrons. Oh. Opinions.
Yeah.
Before we do, and frankly, before I do just about anything, I let them know.
Uh-huh.
Like, hey, this is what's going on.
Yeah.
I want you guys to know ahead of time. This is what we're preparing to do, etc. Because they're frankly just giving us money.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's the least I can do to at least keep them in the loop and the rationale behind some of the choices I make.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's kind of gotten to the point where I'm of the mindset where I feel comfortable enough, at least in what I've been doing for as long as I've been doing it,
mm-hmm.
that I will do it. And if somebody doesn't like it, I accept that.
Yeah.
You know, I don't, like I said, I don't like every podcast. I don't like every movie. I don't like every song. And that's fine. So if somebody does have some sort of a feedback, I mean, if they say they don't like my voice, I'm like, well, this is going to be rough for you then, because this is the one I got. And I don't know what else to do from there.
It's gorgeous and everyone should love it. But yeah.
And the rest of it's just growing and just, I think, feeling a little bit comfortable in my skin that I've been doing it for a while and people will like it and people won't. And that's okay.
See, that's a big thing for some people. I was just talking to someone the other day on one of the script writing things that was saying that they can't stand editing their own voice. And I think it's a thing you have to get through and over, and nobody really truly likes the rings and the ins and outs of it, right? So it's once you can get past and through that, it's so much easier.
Yeah, that's one of the comments that I hear the most from now, especially non-podcasters or people early in podcasting.
Mm.
And I felt the same way. The first couple of times I did a podcast before Small Town Horror, I didn't listen to it because I couldn't stand how my voice sounded. And so the feedback on that was, it sounds like you're recording in like a tin can. Because I didn't even listen to the audio, and I didn't know anything about room noise and noise reduction, okay. Et cetera.
Yeah, yeah.
And what I realized after all this time, like, I know what my voice sounds like. I don't hear it when I'm speaking. I still hear the voice that, the way I think I sound versus the way I really sound. I'm just not surprised by my voice anymore. And the way I try to describe it to people who are getting into podcasting is pretty simple, that, and I hope that nobody ever says the opposite, but I always say, like, has anyone ever come up to you and say, like, I hate your voice? And more often than that, fortunately so far, nobody's ever said yes. I'd feel really bad if somebody said yes. But I'm like, that's because it's your voice. That's what they hear. Like, there's nothing wrong with the way you speak because they've only heard this thing that you're now hearing on the recording. So, like, you don't have to worry about it. You just have to get used to the fact that that's what they hear, and that's okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've only worked out very recently that I think the reason why I've tried to be in as many podcasters as possible is so that people kind of just get used to it as a something, and then they kind of like it because it's kind of there, right? That's what I'm going for, John. Do you think it's working yet? Is it working yet? Do I have to do more?
If nothing, you wear them down, just like I did with my wife. It's just a long game.
Yes, but don't tell anyone, it's a secret, but that's my secret plan. So, you know, there might be lots of amazing people who are just about to embark on their horror-making career for audio fiction. What is the most exciting advice you can give to them with regards to getting your stuff up and ready and out there? What are the key things they need to do to be the best in horror?
Oh man, are we talking audio drama?
Yes.
Are we talking narration?
Well, I'd say under the umbrella of audio fiction, so that can take you anywhere.
Sure. Okay. Well, first and foremost, finding any resources you possibly can off the bat is going to help you. Like if you're reading or listening to Audio Drama Production Podcast or Audio Drama Hub, especially like the older episodes when they start talking about mics and mic treatments.
Yes.
Mike Delgadio, who is a fantastic narrator.
He was on Mediva.
He has an amazing YouTube channel called Booth Junkie.
Yes.
Where he talks about microphones, he talks about like space treatments, anything you could possibly need to start podcast, whether it's in your closet, anything. Mm. The resources are out there. I would say just try and do as much research as you possibly can to figure out how it's going to sound.
Mm. Like the identity of it on the landscape.
Yeah, if you start to, like when I first did Small Town Horror, it was like a USB mic plugged into Tascam or whatever, just like a $20 mic plugged in, no treatment in the room.
Yep.
I won't even listen to those original episodes anymore because I would be so mad at myself for not trying harder for room treatment or something.
Oh, like you didn't know, right?
I didn't know. And so just kind of get that idea, get that at least in your head, those thoughts in your head for the effort that it's going to take and the effort you want to put into it, frankly. And I think it's a question that every podcaster asks themselves maybe regularly is, why do you want to do it?
Good question.
Mm. What's the point? Not in a negative way. Like if you have a story you want to tell because you think it's a good story and you want people to hear it, that's great. That's a completely valid answer. If your answer is, I want to be the next Archive 81 and sell a treatment to Netflix and make money, well, you might want to temper your goals a little bit because that's a pretty small window you're aiming at. And the other was like, does it feel fun? Mm,
that's important.
To you? If it's not, podcasting's a tough space to be in if you don't enjoy doing it.
Oh, gosh, yeah. And that's the thing that's crazy. Like I haven't let out an NDAF episode for a while because real life has been so hectic. And I feel like I'm chomping at the bit. Talking to you now is so exciting because I'm back in the saddle and it's just exactly what I love to do, right? And it's not that I haven't wanted to. It's just that real life mummydom and all the other hats I wear has just drawn me away, as well as voice acting itself, right? Which is where I make my money too. So this isn't, you know, a money spinner as such, so it's had to kind of just take a back seat. So, but it's still, still passion there. Yeah.
And I'm very, very fortunate in this regard. And I've talked to my wife about this before many times that like when I first started doing podcasting, I had two jobs and I did have both my children. And husband, two jobs, children, and I want to do podcasting. And I think I was trying to write another book or something.
A few hundred
like
things on the go. Yeah.
Yeah. No big deal. And somebody asked me something like, how do you do it? Like, how do you find time in the day? It's like, well, one, you're assuming I'm doing any one of those things well. And what I realized was, I think I used to use the old industry standard of like, if you really want it, you'll find time.
Yeah.
And I think that that's a really unfortunate misnomer that people hang on to.
Right.
That completely discredits people whose lives are exhausting.
Yeah.
Like, yes. I'm not going to tell some single parent who's trying to do two jobs, if you really want a podcast, you'll do it. Like, that's cruel, frankly.
Sure.
What I realized is it's not about time. It's about bandwidth.
Yeah.
Can you handle it?
Yeah.
And I can handle it because I have a support structure.
Yeah.
Like, I have a wife who knew it was something that I had to do. I had to at least try doing. Mm. And I have bent my schedule around like not spending nights to do it. Like I'll record on my lunch break. You know, early in the day on the weekend when the kids aren't around, something when it's not loud. But I have the support to do it.
Yeah.
If it was a difficulty in my marriage, like if it was taking me away from my wife and my kids in a way that felt like it was hurting us, I couldn't do it. Yeah. I couldn't at all.
Yeah.
And
the balance is so important. Yeah.
It is. Mm. It really is. And there are definitely times when the scales teeter one way or the other.
Yeah.
Because managing the schedules and managing so many narrators and as much content as we put out and having a day job still can be very difficult, but we make it work.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I could have left my day job a while ago.
Mm-hmm.
And, but podcasting also still scares me. You know,
why?
It's great and it's fun.
The uncertainty of it. Oh.
Yeah. Oh. Because all of a sudden podcasting exists. Well, I don't want to say all of a sudden podcasting existed. Early on, podcasting existed for very wealthy individuals who could afford to pay for bandwidth.
Right.
And then it opened up and resources like Libsyn came out and made it opportunity where you could spend $5 to be able to put a podcast out there.
Mm.
And then other avenues came out where you could monetize like Acast, their current host, and you can make active income off podcasting, and if your podcast grows, you can get campaigns, and like it can become a lucrative industry. And that's still a small percentage, but it's possible. The avenues do exist. And it takes time.
I mean, I think the other thing is that you talk about resources and things, and I think it's about pooling, especially if you're starting up. If you've got friends who are musicians, utilize their skills in music. If you've got friends who are into a bit of tech, get them to play along with the edit with you. Get them to, if they direct amateur theater, get them to come and direct your teams, you know, and I think it's about utilizing that. And I think I'm really keen to tell people that it's really advantageous to get teams around you rather than to try and do everything yourself because of the perpetual nature of it.
Absolutely. And as a very, very introverted person who is able to do this interview because I'm in my own closet under the stairs in my house.
Oh, yeah.
As someone who the idea of professional networking at a day job or even in person for podcasting kind of terrifies me.
Oh, no.
You have online resources. You can meet people. Like it is those original people I met in audio drama that formed the foundation for anyone even caring that I was looking for a narrator. You know, because there's also groups where I also draw a very distinct line between a narrator and a voice actor.
Right.
Mostly in how much money they charge.
Okay. Yeah.
Because some people will refer to themselves as voice actors and expect exorbitant fees. Like it's a national commercial or something like that.
Okay.
Other people are narrators and they understand, no, this industry is kind of tough. And if you can pay, that's awesome.
I'm just happy for a cup of tea and a biscuit, to be honest.
Exactly. You know, until, you know, fortunately, we've been able to get to the point where we can pay a competitive like wage for like our narrations, etc.
Yeah.
But it started out with people willing to do it for free.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And a lot of people, like that's just how it starts.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you also need to enter that space empathetically.
Yes.
You can't be that person that says, well, I'm not going to pay you now, but when this makes it big, like don't temper your expectations a little bit, like be a little bit humble and say, hey, there's this thing that I'm trying to create. Like, I don't have a budget. Is anybody interested in maybe working on this with me?
Yeah, the tone of phrase, I think, is really key because a lot of people are put off quite quickly if you're quite abrupt with telling folks rather than gently informing us. And I think, I mean, as a voice actor who has got a majority paid work right now, I still do. Like, I just got in my inbox someone saying, I'd love you to play this part. I've sort of written it for you. Do you want to play? Can't pay you. And I'm like, actually, yeah, that sounds like quite fun, actually. Yes, please. So it's about the fact that, you know, don't be scared to, like you did with Mr. Campion and Mr. Peter Duda. You know, it's like a approaching folks and just asking, you know, the worst they can do is say no because they're busy or can't fit you in or what have you. So, yeah, I think do utilise the community places like the Audio Drama Hub and the at Audio Auditions on Twitter to ping things out and ask for people to come and work with you.
Yeah, and understand that some people, if you say that you can't pay, they're going to pass.
Yeah.
And don't be upset about that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, I mean, I have had that too, where I couldn't fit something in because I was just very busy on, you know, that buses thing, when several big things had all come along at once and only did the episodes yesterday. And I had to say no to some people. And one or two of those people noticed then a few weeks later, I was like saying yes to free things. And I was like, well, yeah, but it's not you. It wasn't because I didn't want to do it for you. It's just that my life, I couldn't fit it in at that point. So yeah, I think it's all about how you utilize the English language to inform folks as to where you're at. And being upfront about it, I think is definitely key. I'd love to showcase, if I can, some of your beauteous shows. And you've prepared some wonderful clips for us just to show some of the elements of how horror is told through audio fiction. So should we turn to our first clip, John? Do you want to introduce this first piece and why you think it was groovy to include in this showcase? And just to say before we play these clips that some of them contain issues of grief, of death, of suicide, injury, and sudden scares. So if this is something that you don't want to listen to, you can skip on the chapter marker to the next section.
This has turned into one of our more popular episodes. That was, if you ask Steve Blizzen, an absolute nightmare to produce. It turned out absolutely fantastic. But the simple premise is a cable repairman is called out into the middle of the Ozarks to fix some broken cable, and cults and chaos ensues.
I think that's beautifully put. Let's listen.
I don't know how to tell you this, but as long as he wasn't a danger to you or under the influence of alcohol, you're gonna need the paperwork signed.
Jack stated matter-of-factly.
But to me, that would be absurd. This whole situation sounds crazier than a group of shithouse rats. And I think you should just call it a day. I mean, I wouldn't want to be there, and I'm sure your company would let it slide if you said you felt uncomfortable.
I like this guy. He didn't just state the guidelines and hang up. He reacted in a logical manner and said something a non-office drone would say. Never thought I'd meet a company man who thinks like an actual person. Well, I'd say that situation would cover the rest of my problems, but I got another issue. My two front tires are blown out and I only got one spare. I could hear the defeat in my voice.
Don't worry about it. I'll contact a local
As Jack was about to offer me my salvation from this mess, I heard the high-pitched scream of a woman coming from out in the forest.
What happened next? It's just so darn exciting. I really love that build and the use of... So, yeah, do you want to just talk us through like why you think that's a groovy example of horror being played through audio?
That, I have to thank my patrons for that one. I asked, hey, is there any audio that stands out to you guys? And that was one of the responses. Like, first time we listened, it scared the hell out of me.
Okay, yeah.
Because it's a conversation. You know, you get with, especially narrations, you're listening for the people's voices. You're listening to a conversation. So when you are able to utilize effects, which Steve Blizzen's a master of, and that drop in of that scream in the distance, you're not anticipating it. They're not talking about it. You're not expecting anything of the sort. And it's just, it's out of left field that all of a sudden realizes that there's been a drastic change in the narrative. Yes.
Where have the pretty tweety birds gone?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And also the music as well, I think, which you utilize in all of the episodes really adds to the storytelling of that too. And obviously there, it's almost like the heartbeat, your heartbeat is echoed by that music, which I think is glorious. Super. So we move on to Dear Abby. And this one, again, is one that I've listened to a good few times, actually. So, yeah, do you want to talk to us about why you've chosen this piece?
this was a story that I was very hesitant to ever narrate in the first place because it is about stalking and obsession.
Right.
And being a horror narrator, I am also aware of like tonality of stories. Like if something feels too real.
Okay.
Like it can be a very delicate line for me to walk, especially that there are horror fans who could have dealt with similar scenarios and probably more likely someone listening has.
Right. Yeah.
So I was very hesitant to narrate it at all, but you know, I read the story and I'm like, I think I can do the right tone for this.
I think it's one that does make your throat go dry when you listen to it as well, you know? So let's have a listen and see. So here we go. Dear Abby.
Dear Abby. I spent more time today working on the surprise while you were at work. You're really gonna love it, Abby. I've put a lot of work into it, you know. I spent a few hours today putting the finishing touches on it, and I think it's finally ready for you to see. You got home at about 8:30 again and saw the letter laying on your desk almost immediately. I started to smile as I saw you open it, waiting to see your reaction. It was really quite interesting watching your face. I could see all your different emotions and thoughts. You seemed to be confused at first, then shocked, then horrified. You started to shake violently, and I saw that you were starting to cry. Do you not like me, Abby? Why were you crying? Don't you love me?
Don't you love me, Abby?
Oh, man, it gets me every time. So, yeah, the build up to that. And obviously we're trying to work out this relationship as that piece goes on. And, yeah, what other elements in there do you feel really work to build the horror?
You know, just starting off the narrator, and it's in the story too, just being so meek, being so invisible in his own life. And
the Mr. Cellophane, bless
exactly. him. Exactly. Yeah. And just that build to, frankly, I always hope to see more of it in the stories that come our way. Nobody ever yells in narrations. And I think it's so effective. Like, because when you can actually get that pain inside that you can't contain anymore. Yeah. And especially at that point, I think that's about 20 minutes into the narration, there's no indication of anything like that.
No, that's the thing. It sort of gently lulls you into like the story and you kind of gently listen. It's not an intense experience as such, other than moments where perhaps your breath might quicken a little, and then there comes this piece, and just I think the timing of it and the veracity of it is just beautiful for that shock factor. And with the final piece, The Man Who, why have you chosen this piece as an example of groovy horror?
So this one, this was actually one that I wrote. I don't write much for the podcast. I do sometimes. And this is one that I wrote. And I think I originally tried to submit it to other podcasts or something. It just wasn't quite right because it deals heavily on the themes of suicide. And depression and suicide are very important topics to me and things that the podcast donates directly towards supporting any like charities to help alleviate depression and mental and support mental health.
That's amazing.
And I had written a story a while ago about this concept of a character that I just called the suicide man. And it was a man who's he's stuck in that space between being alive and dead, forever committing suicide. Like that is the fate of him. And I wrote this piece and I performed it recently, and this was another one that patrons were like it just like this particular scene, they just said like they got to this part in the scene and it just felt like painful, and I was like wanting to both apologize and thank them at the same time. And so I thought it was just an interesting different kind of feel in horror.
Okay, let's have a listen.
We walked together until I saw the sight I knew well, the Golden Gate Bridge. It was the view I knew from postcards before I moved out there, the view from Fort Point. We stood there and looked at the bridge, partially shrouded in fog. It took my eyes a moment to understand what I saw. We watched as person after person walked to the edge of the bridge and threw themselves off. Hundreds, maybe thousands of people along the entire length of the bridge pushing for space to get over, clamoring like a Black Friday crowd, then falling silently, almost gracefully, into the churning waters of the endless impact, over and over and over again. We watched the hypnotizing, macabre beauty of the waterfall of bodies for a long time, until I started to even recognize a few faces. When they die, did they just start back at the top again?
No, not immediately. There is always time to feel the pain. We feel everything. The wind, the water, the snapping of their bones. Then they find themselves standing there again.
He began to walk toward the bridge, but stopped himself with what looked like a lot of pain. Why do they keep jumping? I asked. He watched the constant wave of bodies wash over the railing and into the water, smacking with a constant tidal wave of life.
Because those few seconds before they hit are the only time it doesn't hurt. Forever.
Oh my. I mean, the imagery in that beautifully paced dialogue is just so vivid, isn't it? Yeah. And where does that take you to?
You know, sometimes I think like the documentary, The Bridge, where they, which is so difficult to watch, live footage of people jumping, but knowing people in my own life who have either committed suicide or struggled with suicidal feelings. Mm. And the idea of, like, the only celebrity death that ever affected me was Anthony Bourdain.
Okay.
It never occurred to me that a celebrity death would mean anything to me, but I loved his writing. And
yeah.
He had gotten recently into Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, which I've done for a long, long time. And this little, like, almost kinship. And
yeah,
and I had been a cook for a really long time. And
and
he committed suicide a few years ago.
Terribly sad, yeah. Mm.
And it's the realization, or at least my interpretation, of a person just can't handle the pain anymore.
Mm.
And my mind saying, but what if that doesn't end the pain?
Right.
Like, what if that just cements you in it? And which might just be where my horror brain goes to, going even more macabre on top of macabre.
That's possible. Yeah.
But I might also hope that the story itself, like beginning to end, also is a little bit cathartic.
Yes.
Too.
I do very much feel that, yeah. I mean, of course, if it's something that does affect you and you will know that it will deeply affect you in a wrong way, then yes, don't listen. And I think with regards to trigger warnings as well, is that kind of information on your show notes and or in your introductions and things like that?
I always put content warnings for suicide, sexual assault, animal abuse, and it kind of varies. I'll even add more sometimes. I'll add the contents in the descriptions because I've found the pushback from people hearing it up front.
Yeah.
It acts like as a spoiler.
Yeah. Okay.
And I understand that from a storytelling point of view. So I've let people know.
It's difficult to balance, isn't it? Because you, of course, don't want to upset folks who will be, as they say, triggered by it. But yes, of course, you also want to keep the story. Mm.
Yeah. And on Patreon, I have actually started to add a verbal warning just saying the content you're about to hear has been identified as having one or more subject matters that listeners may find difficult.
Yeah.
So because, and that particular feedback came from a listener who was vision impaired.
Okay.
Couldn't read the content warnings.
Okay.
Or had difficult reading, or they were commuting.
Right.
So they wouldn't necessarily look at it before they were. So as for patrons, like reaching out, like I said, I always try to do my best for patrons who have that concern. And I'm like, sure, I can come up with something. It's not ruining it for anybody. I'm not telling anyone what's going to happen. For the people who are like, I don't want to know what happens. I want it to be all a surprise.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was not an early adopter of content warnings or trigger warnings, because in the horror space, I was one of those guys who crossed his arms saying, well, it's horror. What's wrong with that?
Okay.
And it took me a little time to realize, yeah, but just because someone's been through something horrible doesn't mean they don't get to like horror.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean they don't get to enjoy a thing.
Yeah.
Like, I don't like listening to things where bad things happen to children.
Oh, gosh, no.
I'll skip those episodes. Mm-hmm. I don't like particularly narrating those episodes. So I totally understand.
Yeah.
You know, it hurts my daddy heart too much to go through it.
I know. Same mummy heart here.
Yeah. So I get it. Yeah. So I do add them in the show notes. I haven't adopted it for the main feed as a verbal warning, but you know, we have the listener discretion advised in the intro, and we do have them available.
Good. Yeah, I started with Bogies and Ghoulies, which is my kids' horror series that I just do a few every year. I just put the actual ages and upwards, I think it's appropriate for. But I think for even some of them, it's probably too scary sometimes. Now, brilliant.
Sure.
Thank you. So those are wonderful clips, and I hope have driven folks in their thousand millions to listen to more, which, as I say, there's a groovy back catalogue if you have not yet found it. And if you are a fan, let's hear a whoop. So we're on to now, John, our final ultimate quiz of horror. Are you ready for this?
All right,
you've got 30 seconds to answer or less each question. I think there's about six questions. So are you ready? You've got your horror hat on?
Yeah, I'm all nervous.
Here we go. Number one, question one. Bing, dun, dun. There's going to be horror music underneath this. It's going to be really horror-y. How do you instantly add more scary to a story? What do you do? How do you do it?
Add emotion. Believe that you're there. Read the story and stop telling yourself that you're reading a story, and tell yourself it happened to you. Because people will hear emotion and suspension in your own voice.
Superb. And I would also add into that, don't be afraid of the pause. Question two. What is the best scary sound effect you've employed, and why and how?
Oh, God. The ones that always get me are bones breaking. Steve Blizzen was amazing at capturing Foley sounds, so I think he would use celery snapping. So we'd have some zombie episodes or something where you'd hear like guts squishing, but it was always the cracking of bones that just shoots right up my spine.
Same. Is horrible. Question three. Who are some of the best horror voice actors you know, and why? What makes them amazing?
David Cummings, Peter Lewis, David Ault, Atticus Jackson, Nicole Goodman, the whole cast of No Sleep, who have appeared on so many other shows. My own voice actors, I've mentioned
people.
Owen McCune has been a part of the show for so long. He's such an amazing character actor.
I agree. Give him his own show, someone.
He is our anchor of the character Jerry in our Tales from the Gas Station series, and I can't imagine anyone else ever being Jerry. He's so funny and such a great delivery. It's hard. I'm going to leave so many people out. I mean, Jessica McAvoy. We just had Wafia White do a story that hasn't aired yet. Yeah, there's too many. That's not fair.
Follow them all. And yes, don't blame you. You've listed many. This is groovy. What is the scariest episode of Creepy so far, in your opinion, and why?
Oh, no. You know, I'm going to be lazy on this one and say Dear Abby, because for me, it feels the most real. It's the least suspension of disbelief. Like, so there's something you would see most easily on the news.
Sadly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, lovely. And the tension behind it and how it unfolds is very, very well done, I do feel. Okay, who is the best scream queen you know?
Oh, Oh, man. I have always loved Nicole Doolin. Nicole Doolin, Jessica McAvoy have such, like, such a specific delivery in their voice. Like, Nicole Doolin, like, has such a, like, a presence. And Jessica McAvoy can get, like, this shake in her voice as she's delivering that sounds so real. It's so good.
Superb. And I would add, I'd add Tanya Milodovic and Hem Cleveland from my perspective. What are your top tips for best narrating practice? Thinking about the pace, the tone, the intention, the vibe, all of the things.
Yeah, I think put yourself there. If you can't imagine yourself there, your listener can't imagine you there either. So you're going to, like, feel it. Just feel the story.
Yes. And why should people make horror?
Because horror is universal. It brings us all together. It's celebrating fear instead of being afraid of it. It's embracing it.
It's like we're all holding hands, but in one of the hands there's a knife.
Exactly. You're normalizing it. It's fine. Yeah. Like, it's okay to be afraid. Yes. The more people can say it's okay to be afraid, the more we can move away from the toxicity.
I love it. Well, you have won the quiz of horror audio joy. So thank you for those beauteous answers. And what's next for you, John? What are you doing? What else is happening in your world? Are you continuing on the creepy adventures, or have you got something else up your sleeve?
Yeah, creepy's still going. I also do narrations for SCP Archives.
Oh, yay. Yes, I've popped up in there now and then.
Yep, with Pacific Obadiah, who, you know, comes full circle. Again, make friends in audio drama. You never know when they're going to come back and play a huge role.
They'll become, exactly.
Yeah, and I do the Bloody Disgusting podcast with Zena Dixon and Megan Navarro, and where we just literally talk about our love of horror. It's all about celebrating horror and none of the other stuff. There's a couple of other projects we're tentatively working on moving forward. I just don't ever talk about them because if it's not happening, I don't like, you guys aren't going to believe this next project, and then nothing happens. So yeah, there's definitely a couple other things, I think, just trying to help me, like, flex my different creative muscles. But yeah, creepy, there's no plans on that ending anytime
soon.
Good,
because it's marvelous. And yeah, it's a wonderful listen on my landscape of things. So yes, and hearty thank yous for all the advice and thoughts and experience you've shared today. I hope that folks have taken away some really good nuggets of advice to put into their own practice. And I personally want to thank you. You're one of my very hugely valued Patreons who have put up with me and my ways for the last however long. So I want to wholeheartedly thank you for the support there to keep Quirky Voices going. It's really super to have your support.
You're very welcome. I always try to support the industry that supports me.
It's just wondrous. So thank you for that. And yeah, I hope folks can find you. We'll put all links that we've spoken of and to you onto the show notes so people can just click on that and enjoy and hopefully interact and tell John how amazing he's been to tell you all the information you've got today. And I hope, you know, that you get your stuff ready to pitch to him for his next shows, right?
There you go.
Brilliant. Well, thank you. Keep being horrifically, horrifyingly brilliant. And I'll hopefully see you around on the crazy world of audio fiction adventures, right?
I'll pop out of a closet sooner or later, yeah.
Marvelous. Well, I love it. And stay amazing. I'll speak to you another time, I hope. Take care.
Thank you so much, Sarah.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
No, it can't be another episode over already. Good Lord, we must be enjoying ourselves or something. I cannot wait to get stuck into the next episode of Indie AF, and I thank you heartily for listening. Please tell John how amazing he's been in this episode to share all these wonderful tidbits and thoughts on making the best horror ever. And I hope you're enjoying this season too. Remember to ping me your 5 top audio fiction picks. They can be all horror if you like. I don't mind. It's up to you what you like, innit? And I'd love to hear any comments or feedback on quirkyvoices@gmail.com or any future guests you think I need to have on or topics we need to talk about. Let me know who you'd love to hear from and I will try and make it happen just for you. Well, happy creating all. Thank you for listening. You're amazing. Bye-bye.